Hey, this is Marty Abrams, chairman of Amigo Corporation.
This is Paul Clark, Dr. Amigo.
This is Brian Heiler, curator of the Amigo Museum.
And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Welcome one and all to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. I am back from taking the show on the road. Man, I've taken the show all over the place this year, but just back from the Cincinnati Comic Expo. As always, had a fantastic time there. Man, that is one of the most enjoyable shows out there. Recorded some interviews, moderated some Q&As. I'll be bringing that audio to you right here on Comic Book Central very, very soon. More details on that toward the end of today's show. By the way, so glad I got to meet up with a member of Comic Book Central Nation out there, listener Christopher Page. He was there. Christopher hosts the Time Shifters podcast. You can find that at timeshifterspodcast.com. He was in line going one direction. I was in a line the other direction, so we didn't get a chance to talk very long, but hopefully the next time we get to meet up, we can chat a little bit longer. Like I said, if you see me at an event, be sure to say hi. I'm glad Christopher had a chance to do that. Always enjoy meeting you listeners out there. Thank you, Christopher, for tapping me on the shoulder and saying hey, and for sharing the lair. Always appreciate when you share the lair. Thank you for doing that on your show. A few housekeeping items before we get to today's chat, which is my exclusive Mego Roundtable discussion. Mego's back. Woohoo! So love it. We're going to be chatting about Mego today. Quick mention, some listeners wrote in to say that they were having some trouble accessing episode 241. That was my Terrificon animation voiceover Q&A. Here's the deal on that. Slight technical glitch during the uploading of that episode. I know there's some tech things here I'm just going to be talking about. The URL was messed up a little bit. I fixed it immediately, but iTunes might have been going after the wrong URL. So some of you folks out there didn't get it. If you had some trouble with that episode, be sure to try downloading it again on iTunes or the website comicbookcentral.net or blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral. That's where you can go to find it. You can stream it. You can download it. You should be good to go. So if you missed that episode, be sure to go back and check that out. You don't want to miss it. It is an amazingly fun episode. Also, we are fast approaching the fifth anniversary of Comic Book Central. Man, can you believe it? November 2013, launched the show. So many guests between now and then. Look, as I've done every year, every anniversary special, I'm going to be revisiting some classic moments from the previous year, that the current season we're in now, year five. But this is where you listeners get to play a part. What was your favorite moment from year five of Comic Book Central? That would be from episode 201, my chat with Star Trek's Walter Koenig, check off himself, all the way up through the current episode. So a lot of stuff out there, a lot of Superman-themed guests. We're celebrating 80 years of Superman this year, 40 years of Superman the movie. So many guests talking about that. Took the show on the road to the home of Superman, Cleveland, Ohio, for the Superman exhibit. Also traveled to Metropolis, Illinois for the Superman celebration. That was fun. Exclusive in-depth interview with Superman celebration guest Brandon Routh. That's out there. My trip to Terrificon is out there. All those parts, all those episodes. The Mad Magazine exhibit right here in Columbus, Ohio. Flashback, flash forward, February. Man, flash guests all month long. We had some fun with that. That block of Lost in Space episodes, the Netflix reboot. Visited with some of the cast and the creators of that show. Leah Thompson, finally got to welcome Leah Thompson to the show from Back to the Future and Howard the Duck. Billy Dee Williams, the one and only Billy Dee Williams. He was here talking Star Wars and so much more, talking Batman. So many guests out there. What did you like? Events, guests, memories, moments. Tell me. Joe at comicbookcentral.net. Tell me your favorite moments, tell me your favorite guests, whatever you want to say. I'll revisit it here on the fifth anniversary special, as I always do. The best part, that is going to put you in line for the Comic Book Central fifth anniversary giveaway. What is the giveaway? I don't know yet. I haven't decided yet. I'm still working on it. But rest assured, look, as it is every year, it's going to be cool. So get those into me, Joe at comicbookcentral.net. All right, time to get to today's exclusive Mego Roundtable. Mego, the greatest toy line of all time, brought us action figures, vehicles, and playsets of just about everything back in the 70s. It went away for a while. Now it is back. It is filling up toy shelves at Target stores around the country. We're going to find out how it returned when I sit down for a Mego Meeting of the Minds with Dr. Mego, Paul Clark, the curator of the Mego Museum, Brian Heiler, And the man who brought us the world's greatest toys in the 70s, he brought them back for us today. The man from Mego, Marty Abrams. They're all going to be here. Okay, epic chat today. This is my first Comic Book Central roundtable discussion. I've welcomed two guests at a time here in the show, but this is the first time three guests. So just a quick note about that. Toward the beginning of the chat, you're going to hear some noise, a little bit of feedback from the Skype connection. We're bringing so many people. It does work its way out. Fear not. It'll clear up. So always trying new things. Sometimes, a few glitches to work out when you're trying new stuff, but the noise does clear up. Before we get to today's chat, check this out. Then you will hear my retro roundtable with Marty Abrams, Paul Clark, and Brian Hyler. Mego Corporation was founded by D. David Abrams and Madeline Abrams in 1954. Originally known as an importer of dime store toys, Mego hit the big time when the Abrams' son, Marty, came on board as president. Marty went after and got just about every license on the market at that time, and he produced a line of 8-inch action figures along with vehicles and playsets. It was unheard of at the time and remains unmatched to this day. Think about this line, man. DC and Marvel characters all under the same roof with the world's greatest superheroes line. That allowed us kids back in the 70s to bring our favorite DC and Marvel comic book stories to life. That was so much fun. We also got spot-on Star Trek figures, sharing shelf space with Planet of the Apes, Wizard of Oz, Tarzan, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Starsky and Hutch, The Waltons, man, you name it. You name it, Marty, man, he probably had it in that toy line. As you can tell from this retro commercial, which is definitely of the 70s era.
Introducing the world's greatest superheroes, Batman and Robin, the dynamic duo. Superman, the Man of Steel. Aquaman, the famous undersea crime fighter. Tarzan of the Apes. Shazam, now featured on network television. Captain America, fighting injustice the world over. Spider-Man, the weird wall climber. The Super Foes, the archenemies of the superheroes. The Super Gals, Wonder Woman, Supergirl, Batgirl, and Catwoman. The Green Arrow, crime fighter from the forest. Iron Man, power personified. The Falcon, that great black superhero. The Green Goblin, Spider-Man's strange enemy. The Lizard, half man, half beast. And that fantastic green giant superhero, the Hulk. And for 1976, the Fantastic Four, the Torch, faster than the speed of light. The Thing, Ben Grimm, Man of Granite. Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Girl both have the powers of invisibility. The Fantastic Four, fighting for truth and honor. Conan the Barbarian, with his sword of justice. Thor, using his Viking power against evil.
Marty and Mego also brought kids one of the coolest toys ever made, 2XL. It was an 8-track tape based... Yeah, I said 8-track tape based. Look, it was the Super 70s, right? 8-track based robot, and 2XL made learning fun.
Hi, you remember my pal 2XL.
I am 2XL, the smartest robot in the world.
Don't get carried away, 2XL, because I can make you even smarter with these exciting new tapes. For kids, teens, adults, on sports, worlds, records, science fiction, music, puzzles, riddles, jokes.
With my looks and your brains, we could go far.
Don't get too smart. 2XL tapes by Mego.
At toy stores everywhere.
Legal troubles, financial woes, and the change to a smaller 3 3/4-inch toy line made popular by Kenner's Star Wars all led to Mego going under by 1983. Now, Mego might have been down, but as you know from every superhero story, the hero always returns. Now, the spirit of Mego was kept alive over the years as collectors scoured eBay to get their hands on the figures that they loved from the past. Dr. Mego, Paul Clark, he helped collectors keep those figures in tip-top shape. The online Mego Museum told the story of Mego through magnificent articles and pictures of everything Mego. And Mego mania was evident as fans assemble every year at Mego Meet. And you've probably also seen those Mego figures come into life on Cartoon Network's Robot Chicken over the years. Now this year, like a phoenix from the ashes, Mego has returned. A new line of 8-inch figures has appeared exclusively at Target stores nationwide. And we finally get an official Mego Star Trek Sulu and Chekhov to complete the original cast. My bridge set is now complete. Thank you kindly. A new Fonzie figure has launched the revamped Happy Days line and shows that Mego never got a shot at. Cheers, The Facts of Life, Married with Children, The Brady Bunch, a bunch of others. Plus, yes, we get to bring comic books to life again as 14-inch superheroes, Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, many others. They are all there as well. All right, kids, we are going to have a fun time in the Comic Book Central Lair today. Joining me today for my first Comic Book Central roundtable discussion are three talented gents who have been keeping the spirit of Mego toys alive and well, so much so that Migos are back and action figure fans could not be happier. I think the best way to do this, folks, we're going to get things started. I think I'm going to have each one of you just sort of introduce yourself to the listeners. Just state your name, how you are associated with the world of Mego. That way they can kind of associate the voice with the name. And we'll go from there. Marty, we'll start with you, and then Paul, and then Brian. So just tell us who you are and your role with the world's greatest toys.
Marty Abrams. Started with Mego when I was 17 years old working for my father. And we turned around and we started to create the superheroes in 1969. It was a joy and a wonderful time.
Paul Clark, Dr. Mego. I started making replacement parts for Mego toys 20 years ago when I found out I wasn't the only grown man who wanted his toys back.
Brian Heiler, Mego Museum. I'm a super fan that has been basically just been talking about Megos for 20 years online and with Paul Clark.
Oh, I tell you what, gents, thank you so much for all joining me today. This is amazing. Look, I'm always talking about Mego toys on the show. I never in a million years thought they'd be back. This is one of those. We're going to talk about how they, Marty, congratulations on bringing Mego back. I don't know how you did it. We're going to find out today. But first, if you could just sort of, oh, and by the way, welcome back. You just got back from, was it Africa?
I literally, 2 days ago, the jet lag has just started to settle in, and I'm getting back to my old self.
Jet Jungle? We can look at a Jet Jungle figure coming up here?
Wait, listen, Tarzan was one of our best figures back in the 70s.
That's true. Are we going to see a Tarzan? Let me jump way ahead, right? Are we going to see a Tarzan?
We're looking at everything.
All right.
I will tell you that there's a whole bunch of characters that we all know, but we can't expose them quite yet.
We'll see what we can get out of you today. We'll see how much we can get. I know we've got phase one and some of phase two I think we can talk a little bit about. But let's go back in time a little bit. Marty, can you give us like sort of the background, like how the company started originally? What kind of toys were they producing? I guess this was your father, your parents started this. And then sort of bring us into that amazing 70s explosion of Mego.
We go back to 1954. I mean, when my dad was an importer of Japanese toys, he went over there and basically whatever that was they were making or selling, he would put them in American eyes packaging and bring them in and resell it as an importer. That went on between 1954, 55, 56 in Japan, all the way through 1964, 65. In that period of time, the pricing became a little heavy in the Japanese market, so they moved from Japan to Hong Kong, where the markets and the costing was even cheaper than they were in Japan. I remember you going back 50, 60 years, so the time frame started to meld.
And these are things you could find like in a five and dime or something, right? Like on the,
exactly,
on the pegs,
yeah, exactly.
Little plastic.
88 cents. Was the key selling point for us at that time. And that went on for the first 12, 13, 14 years of the company. We then developed a knockoff brand of Barbie. We called it Matty Mod, and it was doll costumes that literally could fit the Barbie doll. That triggered for my mindset, we had to get into branding. And that was the first step in terms of what our product lines would effectively become through the licensing and the licensing properties that were available at that time. Because that's really the only way we could get into the branding side. And our first brand that we did was in 1969 was with Joe Namath. He won the Super Bowl. Him and I are exactly the same age. I turned around and called up his lawyer, who's a year older. We were all kids at the time. And we licensed the Joe Namath action figure right after he won the Super Bowl in 1969.
Okay, so Joe Namath, how did you get to meet Joe Namath? Like, did you know him personally?
No. But again, the reason we had acquired all the licenses at that period of time is I was so young and so in touch and in tune with the marketplace that I would literally call up anybody, tell them what I was doing, and they would go, "Well, that's a great idea," because no one was doing it. So it didn't make a difference if it was Warner's or it was Marvel. I had the licenses for both companies.
And you're just a college kid at this time, right?
Well, I had already graduated college.
Okay.
I graduated college in 65.
Okay.
But again, you know, I was 25, 26, 27 years old, and I had no idea of why you would want to do business with me. I mean, I was a kid. I was a funny guy, and let's go out and try to do this. So I just called Joe Namath's lawyer, met him, same age, shook hands, we got a deal. We then turned around and said, okay, if we can do this, let's do our own brand. We'll do Action Jackson, which was basically a G.I. Joe knockoff. We just reduced the size, so all the accoutrements around it, the tanks, the helicopters, the Jeeps, they could be sold at a price point that would retail, because G.I. Joe, in scale at 12 inches, they were just too big if you're going to put the product into those environments. And from the success that we had from Action Jackson, we said, well, let's go do Batman. And that's really how it all occurred.
Is, for people today, this like makes no sense, because it was a whole different world back then, right? How does that happen back then?
A guy walks in my office and he has all these properties, Dick Tracy, the Lone Ranger, every comic book character. None of them really at that time, you know, tickle my bell, and then he says, "Well, look, this is the last thing I'll show you." And it was Batman. I said, "That I'll take." He says, "Why would you want that?" He said, "That's probably the weakest brand I have." I said, "I have an affinity for Batman, and let's go get Batman." He didn't own it. He was out selling all these properties in a presentation that he did not own. He had to go out and acquire it, which is, when you look back, that is the real hyperbole here.
Wow.
Because he's selling something he doesn't own, but now he's got a customer who wants to buy.
He's waiting to see who's going to bite on what, right?
Who's going to put up the advances and the money and the royalties for the brand. So he turns around, he has me, and he goes to DC Comics, and he acquires all the Batman licenses, Batman, Superman, you know, the whole library, Wonder Woman, Joker, Robin, and we acquired the whole line.
Were you a comic book fan? Like, you said Batman was the one that jumped out at you. Like, what was it about Batman?
I was a comic book fan, but I was really a Batman fan from the TV show that happened in the middle 60s, you know, with Adam West. It was really tickled my fancy. It was a really goofy show, and I loved the show. The reason nobody wanted Batman, by the way, is that Ideal Toy wanted to compete with G.I. Joe, and they created a brand called Captain Action. They had costumes around it for Spider-Man, for Batman, and for Superman.
Superman,
yeah.
Captain America.
The kids all knew that Captain Action wasn't the key character, because everybody knew that Clark Kent was Superman. Everybody knew that Bruce Wayne was Batman, or Peter Parker was Spider-Man. And so the product didn't sell. And I knew that. Why? Because I was right there at that age group coming out of my early 20s, why it didn't sell. And that's why we went down and we created the product line that stood alone. And so we knew that if we had to go out and build this brand very fast across the board. So we acquired the DC Warner Library, we acquired the Marvel Library, then we went out and got the Planet of the Apes, which was the Fox Library, and we got the Paramount Library with Star Trek. Now, just those characters alone, there's 120, 130 different characters. If I had to make the tooling of every character, it would take me 6 to 9 months to make the tooling. Each tool would cost $25,000 to $30,000, even in those days, to make. So the investment was hundreds of millions of dollars. So we turned around and said, the fastest way to get to the marketplace is to have a single body. All we have to do is sculpt the heads and do cut and sew. And so our whole premise of how we built that brand and built the line and why they call it Migos today was all we did was change heads and we did cut and sew. So we could maintain the cost on a per piece basis at that time. So we retail for under $5.
But see, we could today, do that at home too, because I did that. Like I would take a Spock head and pop that on a Robin body and just use like his Robin green shorts and make a Submariner. I remember doing that all the time. And I was like, well, I made my own custom like when I was like, you know,
we all
seven.
Did that.
Like we wound up doing that all the time in terms of heads. It just changed panty masks. Yeah. And I'm not going to tell you who back and forth at the time because I'm quite candidly not as up to date as Paul probably could tell you.
Yeah, we know.
We spent our 20s figuring it out.
Yeah, so we had, in that case, we had zero tooling costs. Well, panty masks cost $30, $40 a piece in those days. So if you had five painting masks for $200, we were in the business. Cut and sew cost nothing. It was 25 cents because we had the facilities in Hong Kong for the manufacturing side. So we could be, when a product got hot, we could be in the marketplace literally in 90 days because all the tooling was done. We just sculpting takes 6 days, pull a rotational head is another 6 days, painting masks for another 6 days. So within 3 weeks, maximum 4 weeks, all the tooling is ready to done for manufacturing, including the painting masks. And while we're doing that simultaneously, we're doing cut and sew costumes. Probably the toughest and the longest point was packaging, which took us. We could be literally shipping the goods in 2 months, where today everything is 12, 13 months out. Just they're rolling these schedules way too far out. We did wave 1, 2, and 3. We created that brand, and we built all of this product literally in 270 days. Now, so when I say all this product, I'm talking about how many? What's the total number of SKUs we have?
What on the new stuff?
Yeah,
is 60 characters.
60 characters. Yeah. We will have built and shipped 60 characters literally in 6 to 9 months to the marketplace.
That's extraordinary. On the new line. Okay.
On the new line.
Yeah.
Using the old production line concept that I did back in the 70s.
Now this was amazing to me. Even back in the day as a kid, I remember how mind-blowing this was, because you'd flip open a comic book and you would see the Mego ad, and there would be DC Comics superheroes right there along with Marvel superheroes. It was like, I mean, this was what, 4 years before the official Superman versus Spider-Man comic. I think that was like, you know,
right, in 1973 Superman versus Spider-Man was 77 or 78.
Yeah, well, it would have been better than that, because we're making all these products out of the same factory. So our smaller customers would ask us, well, we need, could you pack in 3 Spider-Man, 2 Iron Man, 1 Hulk, 4 Batman, 2 Robins, and a Joker in one box? And we did that.
But that was mind-blowing for us, because we, like, all of our favorite like, we knew those were two different companies, and it was like, you got to fight them and save the day with each other. You get to do these team ups that you could never see in the comic books.
Yeah,
it was the original shared universe.
Yes. Yeah. That I mean, a whole different era. Well, you know, we're going to be getting back to that now. And meeting up with Stan Lee, did you get to meet Stan Lee at Marvel? Because I know he was just like trying to license out everything, I think, at that point.
Stan Lee was a very good friend of mine. He's a friend of mine to this day. I mean, you know, we started off as kids together. He's several years older than I, but even at that time, at that time Batman was the holy grail, not Spider-Man, and so he was always chasing Batman with Spider-Man. We the collective we, I talk about the Mego group, we drove Spider-Man literally to the point where it was outselling Batman in the 70s. And that's the one thing he always could hang his hat on. Up to the point where my son was head of merchandising back in the late 90s, right before the whole blow up with
Perlman.
He was at Marvel doing all the merchandising. He's very good friends with Stan as well. We go back a long time with.
Well, I know you made some extra money off of me with Spider-Man figures because I think I had about at least four or five of them. There was a commercial where like he was stuck to a brick wall, and yeah. I think I did that all the time, and it completely destroyed each uniform. But I was glad the price point was affordable that I could buy multiple Spider-Man action figures. 1974, the Super Gals lineup. Okay, Wonder Woman, Supergirl, Batgirl, Catwoman. Why the decision at that time, and was there any concern about producing female action figures in a toy line that's aimed primarily at young boys?
For me, there wasn't. I mean, you know, in that time, you know, by 74, it was 5 years later from my first launch into licensing. By 74, we were pretty well swinging in terms of what and where and how the marketplace was going, and people came to all over the place. Gloria Steinem, for example, from Ms. Magazine, she wanted me to do a baby doll boy to sell to boys in that aspect. And although I could not wrap my head around getting that type of product to the marketplace, I knew that there was a place for the Supergirls to come to the marketplace. And we were, you know, and then Wonder Woman comes out as a TV show with Linda Carter, and we just wind up kicking butt with it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Wonder Woman was in Super Friends.
Yeah.
So the first four World's Greatest Superheroes were Superman, Batman, Robin, and Aquaman, which was what Super Friends were. So adding Wonder Woman just made sense. Every Saturday morning you had Super Friends on TV.
Okay, was that like what went into sort of what was produced next or the next wave of like what was really current on Saturday morning TV at that time?
Well, we obviously addressed that every day in terms of what was coming. Mm-hmm. I mean, in any given year, the brand would be driven by what was happening on Saturday morning. So if Hulk was the number one TV show on Saturday morning, Hulk was the number one character. Same with Spider-Man, same with Batman, mm-hmm. same with Super Friends.
Star Trek's the wild card in all this. This is mind-blowing. Can you tell our listeners, again, you know, I hate to crunch numbers too much, but could you tell our listeners how much you paid for the license for Star Trek?
Well, I think they offered me, if I would do it, $50,000. No, I'm kidding. What happened was, at that time, Star Trek was Paramount. Paramount was didn't even have their own licensing department. They had an agent, an outside agent, and he came knocking on our door. And I wasn't really, you know, that into the Star Trek universe at that moment in time. And so I told him to take a hike nicely. but he comes back 2 weeks later. And while he comes back 2 weeks later, now I'm getting into what's happening with Star Trek. And I, you know, it's come out of the syndication. And they just started to do the conventions. And I said, there's something here. So I just threw out a number to this guy, and sure, okay, let's try it. And it was the advance was $5,000. every time I say it, I don't believe I'm saying it. But at the end of the day, that's what the branding was, and that's for the master toy license for everything in the brand. I mean, all sizes, all shapes, all environments, all vehicles. Communicators, all electronics. I mean, it was we had a whole massive toy license.
Everything you could do. And what was the return on your investment?
Well, we did over a 5-year period, we did it well over $100 million.
That's unbelievable. That's just unbelievable. And okay, so talk about the sculpting process too, because you're doing, like, it's one thing to do Superman and Batman, it's another thing to do William Shatner. How, like, did you work with the actors? Were you working, was your team working from publicity shots? Like, because now they put them in a computer-generated thing and they make face molds and do all that. Like, what was the process back in the day?
It was all hand-sculpted. it was a male sculpture. It doesn't mean if it's Shatner. It doesn't make a difference if it's Nimoy. Once you get a male look, my sculptors at that time could turn it out in 3 days, a full-blown sculpt, and with the characters dead on. The female characters are much tougher because of the softness of their cheeks, because of the eyes, because you have to spend a lot more time to characters. But we had a whole team at that time. We could knock out a sculpt basically in 3 days.
Did you work with the actors at all, or like how did you? What were they referencing?
It depended upon the property. If it was a television show, their likenesses went right with us, and we didn't have to deal with the actors.
Okay, so something like Happy Days, or you get Henry Winkler. So they're just are they just sending you a press packet, and you're just basing stuff off pictures and things?
Right. Although for me, on a personal level, I tried to maintain and develop a relationship with the individual character and actors so that at some point we could help. They would help us market their product or their character or their play pattern. So I knew a lot of them, and some I've never met.
That's probably easier, I guess, with lines where, like with Farrah Fawcett or Cher, I'm guessing, like because it's their brand. It's not like a Charlie's Angels doll. It's a Farrah Fawcett doll.
That's correct.
Were you working with them on marketing and different things, like the actor personally?
On those two, absolutely. Cher's face was much tougher to capture than Farrah. Farrah had very striking features. And she had this head of hair that was incredible. So she was a little easy to capture the likeness and look immediately. And we probably got it on the third sculpt. Cher was much more difficult. It took us probably six or seven different sculpts to get her look, her feel, what she was at that time, the personality that she was. Because it's not only getting the look and the feel, you got to try to deliver some of that personality, that unique smirk or her unique sense of humor in that one sculpt that says it all. And so she was much more difficult.
Brian and Paul, you might be able to jump in on this from a fanboy perspective, the specifics. When you think about some of the Star Trek line, I mean, some are amazingly dead on, like we talked about the main cast. And then you get into some of the ones like the aliens, the Gorn and the Mugatu.
Yeah, we've had those questions.
Over your research, like, have you found out like why one of them has like a disco outfit and one?
Oh yeah,
one is basically the Klingon with a different head.
Yeah, I've asked that question, and it's basically like, look, we didn't always get the greatest source material, and two, there was kind of an air of like, who cares. They wanted to do some kind of like fun things. And I think there's some choices, like Paul can talk to you about it too, where I think they wanted it to be a more interesting toy. Like the Charon is much more toyetic than the look on the series, which was kind of a bland, it was a guy in a white jumpsuit. Mm. One thing you can't say is they're not colorful. The alien figures.
That's true. So, Paul, was it like, was it just like a creative license at that point?
Yeah. Look at the Mugatu. If you weren't from the show, he's a guy in an ape suit.
Yeah.
They glued horns on the back.
Okay? Yeah. Be all white.
If you put that out, it would look like a plush.
Yeah.
It's just a white furry ape. So what Mego did was say, well, let's make him an alien. Okay, we'll give him the head. That's the right thing, the horn. And then let's give him a green and red outfit. And and give him the feet. Basically, we'll make him an intelligent ape. Put a little fringe on the sleeves to simulate fur. But it makes him more interesting. It's more colorful. It's a more interesting character.
You have to understand, at that time, I was just hitting my 30s. I mean, maybe I was 30 years old. So my entire staff that was around me were all between 25, 26, 27. They were all young kids. They were up to having the ability to put some of their own innovation into into the individual characters. And I let them do it. I mean, at the end of the day, it was fun for them. It was fun for us, and it made the product more interesting.
One toy I've got to ask you about, the outside of the superhero realm and the movie and TV universe, 2XL. I'm staring right at my 2XL right now. This was one of, I'm going to go like top three toys when I was a kid. How in the world did you come up with the idea for this talking 8-track robot that plays games with you and that, I'm going to say it, I think he's sentient. I'm pretty sure he is.
Well, let me just say this. I know there are a bunch of movies that came out afterwards based upon 2XL.
Short Circuit
being one of them. Mm-hmm. Having said that, let me tell you how that happened, because the guy who created that, he was an outside inventor. He's brought it to my office by someone that I know personally, and they said, I want you to meet this guy. So I said, fine. So the door opens, and in walks a 7-foot box that looks like 2XL, but it's a painted box. And he's inside the box. And he's got somebody feeding him different tapes to actually, how would you play with?
Like a cassette player. He's playing one like on a cassette player.
Right. And his voice was so enchanting. His voice was so capturing for me. I said, let's figure out how to make this into a toy. And it didn't come in as a model normally you would see, that's a tabletop model that an 8-track machine that you would feed the stuff into. He came in as a packaged box. And so I'm laughing my butt off. I said, and we just figured out how to turn around with the technology that was available at that time, which were 8-tracks. And he recorded, the guy that we licensed from, he recorded every single piece.
The guy in the box did the voice of 2XL?
Did the voice of 2XL. Oh, he was also a PhD in psychiatry, and so he wrote all the scripts. Everything was done for that show.
Yeah, 2XL had such a unique voice.
Unique voice, unique character, and that's what sold it.
By the way, do you know what is worse than raining cats and dogs? Hailing taxis! I'm sorry, but dogs, cats, and taxicab drivers like that joke.
And it was the snarky attitude, kind of, and it was just, it was just the greatest thing. I still don't get how it works all these years later. It's amazing. I mean, he plays games with you, he plays tic-tac-toe. It's amazing. That's one of my favorites of all time. Okay, so we've seen this episode. Was it the toys that made us? Okay, can you give us the definitive story as to what happened with the Star Wars line?
The definitive story.
It's such a loaded question, I know.
That's definitely loaded, but it really gets down to...
You would have had it, right? Like, because there's myths out there that's like, I think maybe like your father had passed on it or didn't think it was going to be a thing, or like, what was the deal?
Well, surely my father didn't pass away because he was living in Hong Kong and he had absolutely nothing to do with product at all. He was in the manufacturing side.
All right.
I had just bought the brand of Microman from Takara. And we just had redesigned it for the American side to make it Micronauts. And I was literally in Japan with my number two guy, putting the finishing touches on the line to come to Toy Fair. I think this was in October of 77, for the line to launch the following year in terms of Micronauts. The licensing guy at Fox, again, these guys, they didn't even have their own licensing department. I was their key licensee the year before, actually the last 3 years.
Because of Planet of the Apes. Yeah, yeah.
So the first, he was in New York. He wanted to get a sense of what possibly could we or not do in terms of, is there a possible license here? Because they had They were totally clueless. Now, listen, it was the perfect storm that we didn't get it. And I say that with all due respect to anybody else who wants to talk about it. I was not in the country. We had turned around literally and moved out of the toy industry's box at 205th Avenue, and we moved over to 41 Madison Avenue. I opened up that, it was a brand new building, and I didn't want to be associated inside the 205th Avenue building. The minute I moved there, Hasbro came over, Kenner came over, Child World came over, all the other toy companies, medium-sized toy companies, followed me. All right, so again, that second part of the perfect storm. Third part of the perfect storm is the guy from Kenner who lives in Cincinnati. He's in New York the day I'm in Hong Kong. So he's in New York. So the guy goes down the elevator because I'm not there. He can't even show it to me. He says, all he's doing is trying to get an idea what's going on. He goes up the other elevator bank, and he walks into that guy and makes him a pitch on Star Wars. That guy was my competitor. He saw that I was getting all the licenses. He knew what I wasn't there to take this license. So he bought the license for $25,000. That's what it went to. The perfect storm was I wasn't there. Man. It came out of a company that I did all the business with. I came out, it was in the 41 Madison Avenue building that nobody was in there before I got there. He followed me. Because if he wasn't, if they didn't have this showroom in my building, he never would have found Kenner. He would never have found any of these other companies. And this guy was in town at that time, and he bought just a key out of it.
And then the 3 3/4-inch line became the standard, and the rest is history. Man, what you guys could have done with that line, that's just...
Well, think about it. You just think about that, because here's the issue. It explodes. It's a new genre, a new piece. They made the decision to go 3 3/4 inches, which meant they had to tool up everything. That's the 9-month window I was talking about.
They have to make them. They have to create them.
Well, not even make them or create them. They had to tool up for them. I would have to make it.
That mean, tool up? Does that mean, like, get all the equipment to build these things?
They have to actually make models, and then they have to cut steel to turn around and make the characters.
Oh, wow.
As we do, but that so what effectively they did was they came in January and they sold empty boxes with coupons, and they said, "You buy this empty box with this coupon, you get a discount on the purchase, and you'll be the first ones in line when the product comes in the stores the following summer."
The early bird special, yeah.
Star Wars figures, R2-D2, Chewbacca, Luke, and Princess Leia. They're the Star Wars early bird set of figures. These action figures are not yet available, but this Star Wars early bird certificate package is in stores. With this colorful Star Wars picture display stand and certificate, to send in to get a set of figures by mail. They'll be sent to you at home between February 1st and June 1st. The Star Wars early bird certificate package, new from Kenner.
I would have gotten it.
Yeah.
My 90-day window. October, I would have delivered.
Oh, you would have hit it. That's right. Yeah.
I would have hit it.
Yeah, because they didn't have product out forever.
That's the point.
Oh, man, that's amazing. Well, what you guys could have done with it. Okay, so let's talk about keeping the spirit alive. Brian and Paul, okay, which came first, Mego Museum or Dr. Mego?
Mego Museum.
Mego Museum, yeah.
Okay, so kind of bring us in, like how, because this is, I'm seeing like, I just remember over the years, I'm like, we'll never see Mego again. And then all of a sudden you see like, Twisted Toy Fair Theater, like, you know, like...
We all got into our 20s, right?
Yeah, I think it was like, it was in Toy Fair Magazine. They were doing stuff with Mego figures and making funny things, and then, like, Robot Chicken came. So, like, how did the Mego Museum begin? Like, what was...
Well, the Mego Museum was actually started by Robin Adams, a good friend of mine, who just, you know, was into web design way early, just as we were all kind of dialing up. I mean, my God, this is... We're talking the mid-1990s here, and really connected us. And there was a mailing list at that time called the Mego. What was that called, Paul? Do you remember?
Well, it was an email exchange that Levy had set up.
Robert Levy.
You could email, and it would go to like a group.
Yeah.
So we could keep in contact through sending emails.
This is almost like the beginning of like chat rooms and things, or like
it was the very early days of the internet. So
of that, yeah.
The Amiga Museum was probably like an 8-page website that you had to wait to. But what it really was a community. Yeah. And we all started trading and talking. And I connected with Robin because I was trying to write an Amigo book at that time. And I was, you know, I was having a lot of trouble filling in information and getting photos of everything. You know, it was pre-internet. I was exhausted with driving to people's houses, taking pictures of their, you know, their carded aliens and that sort of thing. And I had kind of given up. And then I thought, well, I'm going to give Robin all my information. So I would send scans of everything. And photos, like actual photos and everything I could to make the Amiga Museum better and better.
This was laborious work because now you just Google anything and you can get whatever you want. You can go to the Amiga Museum.
Well, because we put it there.
Yeah. Exactly.
But the Amiga Museum became this wonderful labor of love because people would go, hey, you know, as a kid I had a soldier ape that had a silver outfit. And I'd never seen one, but then we tracked one down and then we put it on the site and then it became a thing, or Circle Suit Spider-Man. It was a fun era of discovery, like the 90s and the early 2000s. And then you had folks like Paul that were like there were customizers and there were people looking for parts. And then Paul got this this idea of like, hey, I'm going to copy, you know, boots and gloves and reproduce them, which was like you can say there was a lot of love in that, right?
So this went beyond, though, like, right. Hey, I've got extra pair of boots. Here's the, like, Paul, you were making the stuff now.
Right, because when talking to these guys, what I kept finding is that they all were saying the same thing. I've got a Batman missing gloves. I'm missing the capes all red stuff. I'm going to take a pair of Enduring boots and paint them red for Captain America. And I was like, wait a minute.
Well, that's like the rarest figure, right? Or one of the rarest?
But yeah, if you have two pair, what do you care? But so I said, okay, well, I can't do this for myself, but there's other people that I don't want this. That kind of stirs me on. So I figured out how to make a mold and cast it. I said, well, you know, if I have one boot, if I could put in a replicator, I'd have two. So I looked into silicon rubbers and figured out I could do it. Now, if it was doing it for me, I would never get it done. But knowing other people wanted it kept me working on it. So when I got it worked out, I went out and said, okay, I'm going to call myself Dr. Mego. Because Mr. Mego is boring and Professor Mego sounds pompous.
Fair enough.
You know, Dr. is friendly and homey, you know, somebody you can trust. So Dr. Mego, fix Mego's Dr. Mego. So I went out there and said, I'm Dr. Mego. And I set up a website and here's some parts. You know,
were you replacing rubber bands? Like were you fixing the Migos or were you just sort of supplying bits and pieces?
My Migo's broken. What do? I go, if you want, mail it to me. I'll fix it. Send
nice.
It
back. You were a surgeon. You were a Migo surgeon.
Yes.
We all had to be back then.
Right. Yeah, I went through so many of them. Marty, did you have any idea this was even going on?
The answer that I had, yes, I did. Okay. I wasn't ready to embrace it.
Got it.
I knew the Amigo meets. I went to, I think, the first one.
Yes, AmigoCon 2004.
2004. Mm-hmm. So that's 14 years ago. So, you know, it was, to me, it was, I was hard pressed based upon my emotions at that time, knowing what everybody was doing with my brand, not calling it Amigos, but making. And building the companies around it, and I had I couldn't wrap my head around getting involved in it.
So after Mego went bankrupt, there were a lot of knockoff brands, right? Like was it LGN or LJN, and I'm trying to remember.
AHI,
AHI.
Camway, but there's a lot of small brands, big, but it didn't make. Well, it wasn't just the brands or companies. They became more sophisticated. They made a better looking product, they made a better looking design, better looking packaging. But it was all my brands. If you go today, what I was doing in the 70s, I'm using the word my brands. They weren't my brands. They were the brands that I licensed. But I had so much in the collection area of doing all of this that brands that we picked and chose just kept evolving. And even to this day, they keep evolving in that aspect. How many Planet of the Apes motion pictures have been made? How many Superman pictures?
Yeah.
How many Batman? I mean, we knew it. We were the first to do it because we understood the crossover between comic book and television and movies to three-dimensional characters. I mean, that's the one thing we understood real early on before anybody else. And we got the best brands of those of that era, which have continued on right through today.
That's the thing. Like I always say, like I can't believe you guys, you and your team did all that back then. By the way, Dr. Mego, I am looking at my Mego Kirk. I need a pair of pants for him. I haven't been able to find in decades. So you're the guy, right?
No problem. Send me your address.
You got me the hook.
Yep.
I think I have. Speaking of LJN, I think I have one of them wearing a pair of rookie's pants. So.
No problem. We'll get you.
Just so he's not naked on the Enterprise. So this community comes together. Paul, you correct me if I'm wrong. Did you sort of like how did Paul and Marty meet? how did this union come together? This was like you wanted to like bring Mego back in early 2000s.
Marty came to MegoCon 2004. It was in New York. You know, he lives on Long Island, so do I. And that Monday after, I called him up and said, I want to bring Mego back. And he went, yeah, a lot of guys do. Go get a license. Go show me that you know, everyone wants me to do it. Why don't you get a license and show me that you can get this done? I tooled body in China, and I had accessories that I was making with a factory in China. So a friend of mine from high school had worked on Star Trek licensing. So he knew who to talk to at Paramount. And they directed us to Diamond Select Toys. Diamond Select had the license. They were Mego fans. They understood what we wanted to do. I had worked on Robot Chicken. So they said, okay, then you understand deadlines and, you know, that it has to be pro. They gave us a chance. We did six figures. Kirk, Klingon, Spock, and Dorian, McCoy, and the Romulan. And then we brought them to Marty's house, and he looked at him and said, wow, you really nailed it. I swear this came out of my factory. And he said, okay, you showed me you're not full of it. What can I do for you? And I said, superheroes, Mattel, Marvel, DC, that's Mattel and Hasbro. I can't even get my foot in the door. So he said, all right, I'll talk to my friends, President Mattel, President Hasbro. So we left. My friend Joe said to me, he goes, do you think he's serious? And I said, he didn't ask us for any money, didn't ask us to sign anything. What do we have to lose? A couple weeks later, I got a call from somebody at Mattel saying, we're going to be working with you on World's Greatest Superheroes.
Okay, now let me jump in real quick, because something like that there, are they, so you say like Mattel has the license, but is, it's for like specific things, right? You're coming in saying we want to do this one specific action figure, and so you get the license for that specific figure, right? Size or however it is.
Let me just pull back a second.
Okay.
He does the Star Trek figures. His position was, it's Marty Abrams presenting Star Trek, and if you see his original package,
yes,
I'm on that package. There's a blurb about what we did, how we do it, how to make this a collectible. He turns around and sells it through Diamond Select and sells arbitrary 50,000 pieces. That's Star Trek now. Mattel, he creates and helps them build Batman, Superman, Robin, those characters, and they do 25,000 pieces because they did not know how to market the collectible product of it. Mattel against Diamond Select, it should have been a slam dunk. If Diamond Select does 50,000 pieces, Mattel should have done 5 million pieces. And they do 25,000 pieces. And so that is when this thing in my brain said, we have an idea here what we can do. That's all the way back in 2006. And it just sat there. Because I knew to make this thing successful, it had to go mass. It could not be a collective piece because you sell 3,000-4,000 pieces per character. You can't buy it right. You can't sell it right.
And it's like $30 a character. It's like $30 a figure or something, right? Or like a $200 set for like several of them. Like this is high end stuff.
Right. It's too expensive. You can't do business. And so that was always sitting in the back of my brain. And then what happens is Target comes to us and says, we want to do this with you, Marty. We want to give you an exclusive. We want to put you in 2,000 stores. We want to give you an end cap. We want to get behind it. And we're going to buy it like a mass product.
Well, how did Target know what you were doing?
Well, we turned around and we started to flew around building the brand. Mm-hmm. UPCF. I had this idea. And we then went to Target, and we went to several other the retailers, and Target jumped all over it.
Nice.
On this exclusive play.
Nice. Brian, did you, like, for the Mego Museum, did you guys have a sense of what was going on, that Mego was coming back at some point?
We'd heard rumors, but actually it was pretty close to the chest, to be perfectly honest with you. They had a pretty tight ship because I found out in June.
June of this year?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's the weird thing, because like you go through and like I'm just looking at all this stuff, and I've even said on the show, I said nobody could ever do this again, because the only thing I can think of, and guys correct me if I'm wrong, like Power Records in the 70s had like every license and Mego, and that was it. Like, did anybody else have like all these licenses?
No.
We had them all.
Yeah.
How did you do it now? Because these things have to be enormously expensive.
Well, they are, but we found our own highway to make this thing work with the licensors. I mean, in other words, we can't go out and compete with Mattel or Hasbro to get the master licenses. But we have a nuance of what we're doing that they want to work with us and help rebuild these brands internally as well as externally. And so having said that, a combination of us and Target, I don't want to, you know, my personality, in other words, I'm still alive. I should, you know, we were talking about the 70s, it's now 2018. Why am I even here? Forget about doing toys. And so,
Why don't you take a break and retire, right?
I retired 5 times already. So they're embracing us. The studios are embracing us.
I mean, I get that, but it's for somebody like for us that don't know how the business works. I know like Art Asylum and McFarlane Toys, I think they have the Star Trek license. Is that correct?
Art Asylum was bought up by Diamond Select.
Okay. So
that's where that came from.
Okay. How does it revert back to Mego? Like, how do you bring the brand back?
And
how
it's
do you
not
just
my
go-
revert.
A lot of these licenses expired.
Yes.
Okay.
And they expired. But again, we talk about perfect storms. Licenses expired. They came available. New licenses came on. There are people who have developed whole companies acquiring brands and licenses, and they put them into the library. And we just take them off the shelf. We have a unique ability to know what will and what won't sell in our universe. And there's thousands upon thousands of brands out there, and I can't begin to tell you how it is. And I certainly wouldn't want to open up how uniquely what our unique ability is to get all this stuff. But everybody wants to do business in this area with us.
These look amazing, and I just want to thank you, because my bridge playset was always missing two characters, Sulu and Chekhov. I don't know why they weren't made, you know, but for whatever and. Paul, I know you guys were, I think you had cranked some of those out with the, what was it?
With Diamond. Yeah,
but okay. So Brian, tell me if I'm wrong, like, are other people on the message boards and, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, on Facebook and everything, like, I didn't buy those. I know those were available, but I didn't buy them because I thought, well, they're not Migos. Like the things on my bridge playset are Migos. And I just, are there other people that were like, oh, I didn't buy those just because they're not pure Migos?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think that's the norm.
Right.
But yeah, that absolutely, okay. That absolutely happened.
A little abnormal.
We're talking
okay.
about collectors here.
Yeah.
So yeah, that did happen. I happily purchased them, but that's
okay.
Me.
But I'm almost kind of like a purist because I think I remember, like, I didn't know, you know, I didn't know who was behind this. I didn't know Marty was behind this and all these different things. But it was almost like I knew this company was putting these things out, and I didn't want to put something different in there. Now I've got these things, and my bridge playset Enterprise crew is complete. These things look amazing, and you guys went with the classic design, like the little sticky insignias that are probably going to ultimately fall off when I bust this thing out of the package, right?
Yeah, don't open it.
They gotta open it. They've got missions to accomplish here. I'll buy two. Yeah, these things are like totally amazing. Even what went into, and any of you can speak to this, like what went into figuring out which characters were going to be in phase one?
Okay, I was amazed when I went into Mego's office and they said to me, okay, who are we doing? And I go, you mean I get to pick? They go, yeah, well, you know this stuff. What should we do? And I'm like, Sulu and Chekhov. What are we doing for Diamond? They sold out.
Did you do that because those were the two, like you knew those were the missing pieces?
No, because I see what they're selling for on eBay and they're going for $100 a piece.
Wow.
So obviously, don't bother with Kirk again and Spock, you know, let's go straight for. I know who's buying these. They're not 8-year-olds. They are grown men, like you.
As grown so, as I get, right.
Yeah, so off the bat, you know, if we're going to do it, hit the ground, go right for the ones that, the Romulan, the Gorn, those were other ones we did, $100 a piece on eBay. So if you can buy it for $15, they will move. It's easy. The tougher thing is when you're dealing with new licenses like Charmed or Cheers or Facts of Life. What are the characters? And we wanted the first wave to be like a B list, and then wave two is an A minus, and then wave three for holiday is the A list. So you kind of want to build up. But the problem is when you start out with Tootie, people go, "What were you thinking?"
I was going to ask you that.
I'm sure you were.
Yeah.
Better is coming. You know, more. And characters are coming.
Okay. No, it was interesting because, you know, I'm trying to Kim Fields, I think, plays Tootie. She was all excited. I saw her tweeting out that she got an Amiga.
That's what we need more of.
But now I noticed. Well, okay, so that order. Yeah, get the word out. I noticed some of these, like the, you know, Henry Winkler looks dead on from the original Mego line. The Sulu and Chekhov look amazing. Norm from Cheers looks amazing. But some of them are not as close to the actor. Was there license, like likeness issues that had to be dealt with?
We had some issues in look-likes, and we could not use resemblances on a couple of the characters.
Okay.
They have not been as well embraced as the ones that we could. And going forward, we won't do any character we cannot get exact look-alike, we won't do.
How is this phase going on at Target now? Because I noticed the original price point was $14.99. It just dropped to $12.99.
Yeah, but they're gonna go. That's to make room for wave two.
Okay.
So wave two is $14.99.
How was the launch? Are you happy with the launch?
Oh, we're ecstatic.
I mean, what are we looking at here? Is this like how many waves? Is Target deliriously happy? Are they moving product here? Is this like Mego officially back? I guess is the question I'm asking.
Oh yeah, Mego's officially back. Target has exclusive through the balance of this year. We've opened up to the rest of the country and quite clearly internationally for next year. It looks like we will be in 40,000 or 50,000 doors by the end of 2019.
Can you give us a sneak preview of some things that are coming up? I think we're seeing some phase two trickle out. Am I correct?
Yeah, we've had a few sneak peeks. Apparently, some wave twos are actually showing up at Target stores.
Is that early? That was the weird thing. When I first went for, like, I couldn't find them the first week or two. And then all of a sudden, they were, like, everywhere. Like, people were, the Target employees were like, what? Miko? What? I'm like, no, Mego. And then, like, one dude was like, the 70s toy company? I'm like, yeah, they're back.
I get that every day.
Basically, we're kind of seeing the stock boys' revenge.
Yeah.
They're just putting out product.
Yeah,
haphazard. You know, if they find a box of wave two, they don't realize it's wave two, and they put it out.
Okay.
So We're seeing Superman and Batgirl were seen today.
Yeah.
In 14-inch. The two-pack from Wizard of Oz with Dorothy and the Wicked Witch were found. The Full House two-pack with Stephanie and DJ were spotted. It's almost becoming a hunt for targets.
Yeah.
To see what you can find in the wild. The first two were the Gorn and Frankenstein.
Yeah.
They were.
I got sent those, and the guy said, you know, I immediately said, "Where are you? Like, you in California? Where?" He's like, "Michigan."
Yes.
And it just seems so random.
So, like, Brian, you're getting these things in all the time, right? Like, people are like, because I did that. Well, I posted, too. Like, I took a selfie here in Columbus at the Target. I'm like, they're here. And I was, like, all excited. Well,
to be honest with you, there's two things that are happening. One is I'm getting a lot of people sending emails to the Mega Museum going, you know, can I ask you about the availability of a product? And it's like, because it's so new, people don't understand that I'm not the same thing. And the other thing I'm getting is, and I actually adore these, is I get a picture of the end cap sent to me from people, and they go, "Are you aware of this?" You know, and it's that's kind of my favorite, because they're walking in and they're getting, like, smacked in the face with it and going, "What's going on?"
And so, Marty and Paul, you're trickling some of these, like, teases and hints out to Brian as well, too, like, to going on to the Mego Museum, right? Like, Poison Ivy just got trickled out.
Oh, did she? Oh.
Well, that was an official one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Green Lantern was shown as a teaser video.
Nice. Yeah.
Can I throw some ideas at you? Can you give me yay or nay on some of these?
Sure.
I've seen the I Dream of Jeannie box set, which is amazing. Any chance of we just lost a great comedic actor, Bill Daly. Any chance of a Bill Daly action figure, Major Roger Healy, to go along with that?
Did he just die?
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
he was 91.
So where's his fan base? How many Twitter followers does he have?
All right. Well, okay. That's we'll look into that. We'll look into that. That's a possibility.
My God. So he's good.
Go ahead.
But that's one of those licenses where they don't have the actor's likeness.
Right.
So we end up with a generic Healy.
Yeah, so, and then you have to go through the estate.
Yep.
Greatest American Hero.
Yes.
That's a possibility?
Everything's a possibility.
Okay.
It's a matter of finding, it's a matter of what's involved. And, you know, I leave that up to Marty. You know, I just get told what we're making.
Marty, is there a good chance I'm going to see a Ralph Hinckley on my shelf here?
Who?
That answers my question right there. How about a Cheers bar playset?
It was a TV show.
I know the show, but that
was the character's name, Ralph Hinckley.
Oh, the greatest American hero, right.
But the guy who played him.
William Catt.
William Catt was a friend of mine.
Oh.
You got his number?
We did best American hero.
Yeah. Well,
you got his number?
Actually, they prototyped Greatest American Hero.
Yes.
It's like 10 salesman samples,
right.
And it never went to production.
Oh, that's good.
Three and three quarter went to production.
Yeah, there was a toy on the shelves from Mego. Great,
from Mego, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's it going for on eBay now, this prototype?
Oh, they go from anywhere from to 10 grand, I'd say.
Oh.
I owned one, and I let it go cheap. I think about it often.
Okay. But, but you know, $12.99 price point for a Ralph Hinckley figure? Come on, Marty. Let's. I'm going to put that one in there. Cheers Bar playset. Any chance?
Oh, yeah. We don't want to encourage drinking.
You've got Norm holding the beer. You can't tell me that already. The $6 Million Man, the Bionic Woman.
Interesting. We've been thinking about that. That was Kenna. We're thinking about that. Yeah.
Okay, because that's going to be a tough line to top. Because that's a classic. That's a classic.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I do not want to get into specific characters, because once you do that, and someone is going to hear what we're doing here, they're going to jump on top of us.
I just need to know that you're semi interested, and that's good enough for me.
I'm interested in everything.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's my biggest problem in life. You know, I've got a short attention span.
Don't we all? Playsets and vehicles. I mean, back in the day, we had the Spider-Mobile. We had the Joker van.
Eventually, yes.
Okay, so we can take these figures we're getting down. What's that?
You have to buy more stuff first.
Okay. How can we do that? Website. Become a Mego ambassador. That's what we want to get everybody to do, right?
Yep.
How do we do that?
MegoAmbassador.com.
You sign up, and what do you get?
We haven't we're not really giving anything out yet.
You get a newsletter, right, with all the like insider information?
Newsletter. Yeah, we're it's only been about a month since the whole thing dropped at San Diego Comic-Con. So there was a newsletter put together. I think they had a problem with their email software because I didn't get it, and I'm ambassador number one.
One of whatever, yeah.
Well, trust me, I was the first guy to fill in because I want to make sure I was in there.
Well, that's what we want to do. MigoAmbassador.com. We're going to get that information out. Your Dr. Mego site, if I need my Captain Kirk pants, where do I go?
DrMego.com.
And the Mego Museum, where can we find? And this is like basically the entire history of Mego out there, right?
Right. And actually, we just started a new wing to talk about the 2018 iteration of Mego.
Okay, so there's a whole branch now coming along for that, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Nice.
And it's square footage. The Mego, yeah, we had to doze the back parking lot. It's MegoMuseum.com.
That's going to be great, man. I'm telling you, well, first of all, Marty, on behalf of myself and the listeners, thank you for bringing us the greatest toy line of all time in the first place. We all appreciate that. Paul, Brian, thank you both for keeping the interest in Mego going all these years. You gents are amazing. The figures look amazing. I've got the Fonzie right here. Oh, by the way, no thumbs. No flipping of the thumbs.
Oh, the thumbs up action. Yeah, I'd originally done a thing. And, hey, listen, at $15, flip your own thumb.
Oh, man.
By the way, where are you located?
I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I missed you guys this year, but I'm definitely going to be, I will meet you all in person next year. You guys
Mego Meet is coming back to Columbus next year.
They already announced the date.
Yeah.
It's in June?
Yeah, June 15th.
June 15th, yes. I will meet you here in Columbus.
Thanks, Paul.
I will mention that. Yeah, so that's going to be in so people can check that. Is that on the Mego Museum too?
About Mego Meet? We have a Mego Meet Facebook page. We're going to be very loud about it this year, yes. But yeah, June 14th to 15th, Columbus, Ohio. Please join us.
Looking forward to meeting you all in person. That's going to be fun. Thanks, guys. Thanks for bringing it back, man. This is a blast.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I so want a Greatest American Hero 8-inch Mego figure. I think we might have just gotten a little bit of confirmation there, at least confirmation that it was in the discussion. That's out there. That's very cool. We know there was the prototype back in the day, but we might actually get one. That would be amazing. By the way, as many of you know out there, I contribute regular segments to the IndieCast. I think Raiders of the Lost Ark is the greatest movie of all time. Is it possible we could get a Mego Indiana Jones figure? Look, I didn't get a chance to ask about that. I'm sure Disney and Hasbro, they're looking at things. But man, if anyone can get a license for an 8-inch figure, it is Marty Abrams. Marty, that is the holy grail. Go get it. We would all love that. Don't worry about those rolling boulders. I'm sure you can outrun them. Look, also in the interview, I didn't get a chance to ask Marty about the line of Superman the Movie Mego figures that they produced back in the day, 40th anniversary of the film now. It didn't really take off like Christopher Reeve did in the film. Mego did produce a few of the figures. 12-inch version, some pocket superheroes. It didn't really go as well. If you want to know that story and get some like really cool pictures and different things, it's exactly where you think you'd find it. It's at the Mego Museum. So check out the Mego Museum for that as well. I'm going to put links to everything we talked about today in the show notes for this episode and my website, comicbookcentral.net and blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral. So check those out. My thanks to Marty, Paul, and Brian for joining me today. That was fun. Can't wait to meet up with everyone next year right here in Columbus, Ohio at Mego Meet. That is going to be amazing. All right, time to hit the Comic Book Central mailbag. First up, I heard from Matt Rumpf. Matt writes, "Hey Joe, loving the podcast. I actually got behind on them due to limited listening time, but just caught up on the last 10 episodes, finishing up on the Terrificon episodes now. Love the Marty Croft episode. Such a sense of humor. Keep getting those great guests." Will do, Matt. Thanks for checking them out. Hope you enjoyed today's show. It was a lot of cool guests today. A few more amazing guests in the weeks ahead, and I'm already lining up shows for year 6 of Comic Book Central, so a lot of good stuff heading your way. Stay tuned. Also heard from Ed Gosney, who has a blog at edgosney.com. Ed was also at the Cincinnati Comic Expo, and he writes, "I really enjoyed your hosting job during some of the panels I attended. Great job." Hey, much appreciated, Ed. Thank you so much. Be sure to say hey the next time. I always love meeting you listeners out there. You know, just tap me on the shoulder. Come up to me after the panel. Look, for those of you who didn't get a chance to attend the Cincinnati Comic Expo this year, never fear. Comic Book Central is here because next week on Comic Book Central, my multi-part adventure at the Cincinnati Comic Expo begins. Voiceover artists Michael Bell and Mary McDonald Lewis, Arrow's Manu Bennett, Superman artist Tom Grummett, they are all coming your way. Plus, as Ed mentioned, those Q&As. My Q&As with Carrie Elwes from The Princess Bride, Katrina Law from Arrow, and LeVar Burton from Star Trek The Next Generation, and Reading Rainbow. Man, folks love them some Reading Rainbow there. So much goodness I'm going to be bringing you. If you haven't subscribed to the show on iTunes just yet, if there's some new listeners out there, that's something you're going to want to do. This is the time to do it. Also, you longtime listeners out there, your favorite moments, get them to me. Joe@comicbookcentral.net. 5th anniversary special is on the way. Cincinnati Comic Expo specials next week. Until then, man, bust those Migos open and bring some comic book stories to life. That's what I'm going to be doing. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
What do Newsweek magazine and more than 40 other publications have in common? They all love 2XL, the robot that thinks he's human.
Giraffes are the only animals that make no sound, true or false. True.
A uniquely educational toy for school children and adults.
I'm impressed. The next time you hear nothing, be careful. A giraffe might be coming.
More a friend than a game.
The oldest city in the world is Jerusalem, Damascus, or Bayonne, New Jersey. Wrong. Damascus is the oldest city. Maybe your brain is experiencing a meltdown.
Oh, no.
Can be used to play any 8-track cartridges. Adults can't resist him.
2, 4, 6, 8. This is the way we lose weight. Woo! That was some workout. You're really shaping up.
My turn.
Challenges every member of the family.
You are truly an amazing human.
2XL, the robot that thinks he's human. Now 36 tapes for all age groups by Mego.